Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is an RNZ podcast.
Kia ora e te whanau. Welcome to Country Life. I'm Duncan Smith.
It's great to have your company. Ko Sally Round, tēnei. Today we meet some of New Zealand's rarest horses at the Canterbury A&P show. Later, a hard-working couple are giving farming a go and they're loving it.
And in our feature story, we head to an asparagus farm in Rangitike. The owners of Mangaweka Asparagus say their community helped them when tragedy struck, and now they're giving back and spreading their passion for asparagus. That's later in the show.
But first to a roundup of the week's rural news with Sally Murphy. And falling red meat prices have hit the Alliance Group.
They have. The farmer-owned co-op's books are in the red. It's just reported a loss after tax of $70 million for the year ended September. That's a big flip from last year's $73.6 million profit. Alliance Chief Executive Willie Visa told us falling prices are to blame and there were already high volumes of products in markets that had to be sold, which didn't help.
What then happened with those prices coming down, you revalue your inventory because we use a net realisable value calculation to do that. And so we lost $60 million within the first 3 weeks of November.
Billy Visa says the company has carried out a full review of the business to find efficiencies, and more than 10% of salaried positions have been cut, mostly in the office.
Now, green kiwi fruit growers have aired their grievances about lower returns.
That's right. New Zealand kiwifruit growers held two meetings in Katikati and Te Puke last week to gauge the feeling of growers who have had a couple of tough years with falling returns and fruit quality issues. Chief Executive Colin Bond says about 300 growers turned out.
Definitely the question was, am I still going to have a viable business in the future? And the answer to that depends a lot on productivity. So what sort of yields can growers achieve on orchards? For post-harvest, it's about managing that conflict of packing multiple varieties, so making sure that they can pick and pack green at the optimal time. And, of course, Zespri have a job to do to try and optimise the sale price of our fruit in market.
Colin Bond says growers say they're doing it tough, but are feeling okay about the upcoming season, with good weather forecast for pollination of the green vines, which gets underway soon. He says NZKGI, the growers group, has also commissioned a report to see if marketing the bulk of kiwifruit through Zespri is working. He says the results will be shared with growers this month and published early next month.
And Waikato has seen the opening of a new milk processing plant.
That's right. Singapore-based agribusiness giant Olam Food Ingredients opened its Tokoroa plant this week. The company set its forecast payout for the season of $7.25 a kilogram of milk solids earlier this year, matching Fonterra's current forecast midpoint. New Zealand General Manager of Milk Supply, Paul Johnson, says strong farmer support is giving the company confidence in the future.
We're really comfortable with the a number of farmers that have partnered with us for this first stage, and it's given us confidence to start investing for the next stage. To enhance our plant capabilities, this includes production of high-value protein concentrates. It goes into beverages and functional ingredient solutions for customers around the world.
And what has Federated Farmers had to say about it, Sally?
Well, Waikato's Federated Farmers Dairy spokesperson, Matthew Zonderop, says the new company gives farmers in the region options for their milk supply, but he says those considering changing companies shouldn't take it lightly.
You know, no one can deny really competition is good for the market, but I would say the profits are going offshore. Generally, personally, I don't agree with the profits going offshore. New Zealand milk, New Zealand dairy farms, they should be staying within New Zealand.
Now the onion industry is celebrating a win in the China market.
Yes, a New Zealand delegation has just returned from another trip to Shanghai, this time with a freshly signed memorandum of understanding with local businesses to help enable freer two-way trade of onions between the two countries. Here's Onions New Zealand Chief Executive James Cooperus.
We came away very optimistic about the market. We estimate within 5 to 10 years we'll be exporting $50 to $60 million worth of onions once we gain market access. So, we're quite buoyant, I guess, about the prospects right now, but a little bit of work to get there still.
And Sally, are logging companies urging motorists to be more patient?
Well, Stuart Drummond Transport has posted some pretty shocking footage of a close call. One of their drivers was heading towards a logging operation near Picton when two motorbikes overtook it. Another of the company's logging trucks with a full load was coming the other way, and there was nearly a head-on collision. Company spokesperson Brodie Drummond says most of the company's trucks have a dash cam, which capture an incident almost every week.
Various degree of severity. We're very lucky with the CVST here that they do follow up with us and with the vehicle owner and discuss, you know, why and how it happened. We have had a couple recently where they have been taken to court and charged.
Brodie says going into summer when more people are out on the roads, it's a timely reminder for people to slow down and think twice before overtaking.
And just finally, you got out to the New Zealand Agricultural Show in Otatahi, Christchurch this week. How was it?
Well, Christchurch put on some stunning weather as always, so thousands flocked to the show. Wood chopping, dog trials, rare breeds and prize cattle were all on display. 16-year-old Shay Roskam bought her Belgian Blue, called Axel Rose, all the way from Te Aroha in Waikato.
So he's 2 years old and I breed them. So I brought his grandma and his dad from Sir Lockwood Smith, and then she's just kind of produced me all my animals. So, yeah.
And why are you interested in that breed?
I feel like their nature's quite good, like they're a real calm breed, and yeah.
And so what kind of effort went into bringing him to the Canterbury AMP show today?
Well, there was a lot of preparing him with the show stick because I've always shown him as a yearling, but he never was really interested in it. And then so that I put a lot of time in, like teaching him the show stick, and then I guess, yeah, just clipping him and that.
That's Shay Roskam with her Belgian Blue.
Well, thanks for that wrap, Sally. Cosmo was also at the show. Let's join him at the rare breeds display area to find out about some special horses on display. He's with volunteer organiser and self-confessed hippophile, Lizelle Silver.
So I'm a member of the Rare Breeds Conservation Society of New Zealand, and also I'm a founding member of a new society called the Rare Horse Society of New Zealand. And so last year we had 14 equine breeds, including a donkey.
And this year you've got...
This year we've got, we'll have 11 because tomorrow we've got the Tennessee Walking Horses coming. And they're going to do a roping display, so hopefully keep your eyes peeled for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How rare are some of these horses?
This is one of 31 Pasifinos in New Zealand.
Only 31?
Only 31 in New Zealand. So they're called what we know as a gated horse, which means that instead of trotting, they have got an alternative way of going as well as the trot, which is smooth. Your bum doesn't leave the saddle, there's no posting required, and it's comfortable. So you can ride one of these all day and get off feeling actually fresher than when you got on, probably.
And where does this horse here come from?
They were developed in South America from stock that the conquistadors brought over and Christopher Columbus. And so three breeds were all pulled over and they kind of intermingled and became a Criollo type horse. And then certain areas, so Puerto Rico, Colombia and Peru, developed their own type just by their requirements and desires. So there are now three types. This is the Colombian Pasifino.
How would you describe her?
Her main feature is she's got very fine legs and very small hooves for her size. They're never really over 15 hands, so they're a smaller type, but they are quite well-sprung ribs. They really round out your legs as a rider, so as soon as you ride on them, you just feel like you're flying or riding on a cloud or something.
She's right up beside us now, having a wee munch.
She is very people orientated. She's just a very loving horse, really. Like, I don't have to catch her, she catches me.
Show me some of the other horses you've got.
Yeah, so this next one is a Percheron. This
a
is
Percheron.
The only black Percheron in the country. And Perche is a French region, so they're a French horse.
A French working horse, I guess.
Yep. They were, developed to be working the fields over there.
She is huge.
She's in a foal at the moment, so she's going to have a baby soon. And she's really cool. Like, Percherons, while being a draft horse, are actually a lot more agile than you think they would be. Mm. They can really get moving. So there'd be a good option for people that like the idea of a Clydesdale but want a little bit more pep in the step out of them.
Yeah, something a bit more refined.
Yeah.
And here's the classic Shire horse.
Shire.
NZ population 100.
Under 100,
under 100.
Yeah, and his owner is over here. So we will just get Sarah over.
Hi, Sarah.
Sarah, would you like to talk about the Shire horses?
Tell me about your beautiful horse.
This is Lexi. Yeah, she's three. Yeah, first time off the property, actually, so she's taken it well. Yeah.
What's it like being here with her at the show?
Awesome. That's the best thing I've ever done this year. Fantastic. Yeah. It's been fabulous seeing heaps of the kids coming in and having a pet, the older people. Yeah, just wonderful. The old farmers, and didn't really realise how much people would enjoy the breed.
And is Lexi the only rare breed that you've got?
No, we've got three at home, yeah. We've got a grey colt, a Shire colt, and another black mare that's gone to be put in foal to another Shire in Invercargill.
Yes. And Lisselle, how many rare breed horses have you got?
I've just got the one, yeah.
Next to Lexi is a much smaller, slightly more delicate horse. What kind of breed is
this
she?
This is a Kyger Mustang, and they are critically endangered worldwide. If any of you have ever seen the Disney movie Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, this is the horse they were modelled off. They are all this beautiful colour, which is called dun, so they're kind of a dusty colour all the way through to like a golden colour. They've also got stripes on the legs, like tiger stripes on the legs, so they are special.
There are a few camper vans and tents just behind the horses. Do people stay here with their animals?
Yeah, we're mostly camping here. Yeah. So there's a few floats tucked in the back of our riding area and tents and that. Some are sleeping out in the car park in their floats. So it's really fun. Yeah, we just have a great time. No one, I don't think anyone who was here last year had a bad time.
How did you get into horses? Because it sounds like you're passionate.
Oh, yeah. I started riding when I was 7 in a riding school, and about 4 years in I stopped. Just life got in the way and I didn't get back to it till I was about 25. And this Spanish Pasofino popped up, I looked into it, and it seemed to be the perfect match of everything I wanted. And I just thought, oh my gosh, God's made me a horse. I didn't realise this was something we could even have. And it just seemed like the universe gave me this horse. And so that's how I got into it. The lady who sold me the horse was a member of the Rare Breeds Conservation Society, and she was arranging the horse section of this display when I met her.
Oh, so that's how you got into organising the horse section here.
Yep.
Now, you've also got a Timor pony here. Tell me about them.
So the Timor pony is actually critically endangered worldwide now. No one really knew this until I started trying to do a head count of what we had in the country and sort of realised actually we don't have as many as people might think. So there are about 1,500 worldwide. Obviously they are in Timor, which is a little tiny country just a little bit north of Australia. So they were exported from there to Australia in the early 1800s and then over to New Zealand as well. They were used as pit ponies in the mines here for a long time. And but we think the original lines have probably died out since then. We believe that some have been imported back in the 50s, and since then we've only got about 100 now. They're an awesome breed. They're really unflappable type, but they're also really energetic and willing to get going. So in their pure form, a really competitive pony for show jumping, endurance, scurry. They pull carts really well. And even though they only get up to about 11.312 hens, they're actually extremely strong. And they are really in need of help. If anyone's interested to get involved, do reach out to us via our Rear Horse Society of New Zealand page, as we need people interested to breed them. They can only be found in Timor, Australia and New Zealand.
Lizelle Silver there at the New Zealand Agricultural Show in Canterbury.
You're listening to Country Life on RNZ National, 101 FM.
We're heading to a busy 15-hectare property on Banks Peninsula now. Cosmo is with first-time farmers Stacey and Odie Geelan, who are living the rural dream.
We are in our little farm, Geelan Family Farm in Michikararo. It's a little block that we've moved just Christmas 2018, so about 5 years ago. And we've been sort of trying to figure out what we like to do, how to do it, and just sort of go with the flow.
What made you want to move to the country?
For us, it all started with the bees. We feel really passionate about the bees and honey, and we actually did a beekeeping course back when we lived in town, because we're both city kids. And it just sort of started from there. We started having conversations about what it would be like to have a bit of a piece of land, what it might look like, can we grow enough food, what sort of food, keeping up the bees, and then it sort of evolved from there. And as we sort of started looking around, we both lived in Christchurch at the time, and we were just always drawn to particularly Banks Peninsula and Selwyn area. And it was just by sheer luck and persistence and hard work, we found this little gem and just called it home.
So when you saw this place, did you know straight away that it was right for you?
Ish. it was the journey. We looked at a couple of places in the neighbourhood as well, and really, because we're both migrants, we don't know the area all that well, like history and trying to learn about the health soil and the natives and all those little bits and pieces. So it was a huge journey of discovery. And when we found this place, it just seemed to be ticking most of the boxes, and we saw a lot of potential. And as we're walking around the property, it was like, okay, we can do this with this paddock. We can put an orchard over there. Or
started dreaming,
and it really took off. From then on, it was really, really fast. It happened really fast.
Yes. So. Where are you from originally?
So I'm originally from Russia, deep south, that is, and Odie's from Belgium.
Odie, how did you end up here?
Working. Came over for working holiday. Stayed. Met Stacey. Got married. Bought a place. Got kids.
Never looked back.
Never looked back.
You'd just finished work when I got here. What do you do?
I work in civil construction a few days a week. So we mainly do subdivisions, all sorts of stuff from drainage to road maintenance to everything. Yeah.
And those skills, I guess, would come in very handy here.
Yeah, especially the digger skills. Yes. Always handy to have a little digger on site.
And Stacey, how did you end up in New Zealand? When did you come here from Russia?
Oh, that was a long time ago, about 14, 15 years. I came to Auckland. I had an invitation from AUT University to study. And I did that, and then I was lucky enough to find a job after graduation, and I only had a bag to my name, that was it.
And what did you study?
I did a business degree.
Are you working?
Yes, I have a full-time job. I work for a place called Pure Oil in Rolleston. That's an oilseed processing plant. So we make cooking oil and we also make animal feed, which is quite handy when you're a farmer.
Now, you mentioned honey before. You both did a beekeeping course.
Yes, it was a beekeeping course in Papua New Guinea. So we did it after work. It was an introductory course. They teach you the basics about the beekeeping. What is a bee? What is a queen? How to, life cycles, how to build the hive. Just giving you really the basics to figure out if it's something that you want to do. And like most people, after finishing the course, we ended up buying a hive.
And now we are standing beside a mobile extraction unit, I guess. What would you call this trailer?
That is correct. That is a mobile honey extraction trailer / commercial kitchen unit. It's a 9 meter long self-contained unit, and that's where we extract our honey. We mostly work with small beekeepers and hobbyists, so people that have only like one or two hives would really love to have a taste of their own honey, gift a jar to a friend of family member, and they do not have the skills or equipment to do it ourselves, or just never been around, that sort of thing, really.
So you turned what was a hobby into a business?
Yeah, pretty much.
How did that come about?
We had the opportunity to buy this and yeah, we jumped on it. Learned it along the way. And so, yeah, we do everything from one box to 30, 40 boxes. From honeydew, manuka, normal clover, wildflower mix, everything.
So you can go to someone's property and process the honey there?
Yep, we can do that. Or we can pick it up, drop it off. We can put it in jars, put it in pails, everything.
Did you spot a gap in the market?
Yes, I'd say so. This was an existing business. It was just it's a really niche market. Wasn't really well marketed, so it's pretty much word of mouth. We always wanted to sort of carry on with our passion for the bees and what else can we do. And we sort of was thinking about having a commercial kitchen sort of later in our farming journey, maybe a few years, you know, down the line. But when opportunity came around, it was really silly not to take on it. And it's been a busy season last year and we're coming into honey flow in the next month or so. So I'm hoping for another productive season as well.
Who goes out and does this work?
Yeah, I do the extraction most of the times. Stacey is more from the marketing and accounting.
So is it hard to manage with your other job?
No, we do it mostly in the weekends.
So or, yes.
Yeah, weekends and evenings.
Can we have a look inside this this mobile facility?
Sure. So the boxes come in, the full honey boxes come in at the end of the trailer. Mm. The back will open. Stack the boxes in there, then they will be uncapped, and then they go in the extractor. And then from the extractor, it's getting filtered, putting in jars or pails, whatever the client wants.
And you've got quite a big extractor
here. Yeah, we've got an 8-frame extractor.
Stainless steel.
Stainless steel, nice and shiny.
How much honey can you fit in there?
So it fits 8 frames. A super got 10 frames out of a box, full depth box, you get around 20 kgs of honey.
Now, behind this mobile extraction unit are a couple of saddleback pigs that I can see and I can smell.
Yeah. So we got 9 breeding sows and Boris, the big boy, that's looking at you.
They're big pigs, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yep, this is one of our largest paddocks. So we have just all of them roaming together for a bit. And then the girls will have a bit of a rest in the smaller paddocks later on.
Why have you chosen saddleback pigs?
Oh, Stacey's choice.
Tell me more, Stacey.
I was always quite fond of them. They're a heritage breed, an old English breed. They're very hardy. They're amazing grazers. And it was quite important to us with little kids. They're really friendly and have a very mild personality. Mm. They look quite big, but Boris the boar here is actually probably the easiest pig that we have to handle here. And the meat is quite amazing. It's marbled. It doesn't have any lot of fat because they're slow-grown pigs, so they don't have that. They don't have that need to put a fat on real quick, like say, white pigs. So yeah, they're really nice to look at too.
Yeah, how would you describe what they look like?
So they're primarily black in color, the long head, and most of them tend to have a wide, broad bend around their sort of top shoulder. Down the torso, which called saddle. That's why they get called saddlebacks.
And we just breed for piglets because there's a lot of demand on it.
How much would it cost to buy one of these piglets?
A 3-month-old piglet goes away for $160.
That's not too bad, considering how big they get.
No, not at all. They, like I said, the meat is really amazing. So that's the quality you buy. And the good nature, they're very easy to handle and maintain.
Do you have any other animals here?
Yeah, we got a few cattle, and every year we rear a few calves. So we got a Highland bull. Stacey calls him Ginger Nut. And we don't have any veggie garden at the moment, but we got a lot of fruit and nut trees.
That were pre-existing?
No, we started that last year. So we're converting 2 hectares into orchard, apple and pear. So the bad apples can go to the pigs, the manure from the pigs can go to the trees. So all needs to work together.
Yes. Are you organic here? What's your farming philosophy?
We're not organic. We try to do minimum spray. Sometimes we have to, especially when we plant new trees. So yeah, we're not certified organic, we're not organic, but we use seaweed as fertilizer, pig manure. Yeah.
You do what you can to avoid using
pesticides,
chemicals.
Yeah. Yeah.
We are walking towards a paddock and we're passing some more of your saddlebacks and they are munching away at something.
Yes.
Hello.
So they get a very rich diet of just about everything. So they get a lot of green waste, and that's your lettuces, carrots. They're really fond of avocados and strawberries. We also supplement them with a rapeseed meal, and we also get some old eggs from our local chicken farmer down the road. So they're not really fond of capsicums and onions. Everything else gets mulched away.
Now, Ginger Nut the Bull is coming up to us. Yes, you are very handsome. How would you describe him?
Oh, Ginger Nut, he's, I'd say, caramel colour. He's very shaggy. He's got curly hair on the top of his head and longer hair throughout his body. He gets shaggier, much shaggier during winter time. Now he's a bit lighter on his coat, but he likes his slice of bread. And he's very fond of apples.
And he was the first farm animal to be born here.
Yes, he was. He came slightly earlier than expected by about a month. It was quite a funny story. I got home from work quite pregnant myself, and my neighbors came around and said, oh, there's something happening in your paddocks, you should have a look. So I came around, and there he was lying outside of the paddock with the mum on the other side in the paddock. So I had to lift him. It was a bit of a chore with my big belly, and toss him to the mum. Mm. But no, he's doing really well. He's a bit opinionated at times, but he's a good boy.
What have been the biggest challenges you faced here in terms of developing the land and the farm?
I think reconciling our vision and our ideas with reality and just trying to make it work, because we have some really big ideas at times. Audie's idea, man, and I'm the one who's trying to rein it all in. So it's a constant work in project for us. We'll have 5-10 things on the go, easy as, and just trying to sit down and say, okay, well, what is a priority here? What is a need and what is a want? It's two very different things, and just trying to be realistic about our capabilities with the time management, again, with the little ones, and just having a bit of time for ourselves as well, quite important.
Has there been a lot of trial and error?
Yes, especially in the beginning. We started with ducks, turkeys, guinea fowls, and it was not our thing. So, yeah. If I would do it again, I would ask for advice. And I was always the guy that just try it, see where it ends. But yeah, lesson learned.
Now, Odie, we've come into your orchard. Tell me what you've got growing in here.
We've got Monty Surprise, Sunrise, Ballarat, and Galaxies at the moment. So the rootstocks are based on the soil. The apple varieties are based on the harvest time, so that we got like 4 or 5 months harvest time. Yeah.
So you've got the early, the mids and the lates.
Yeah.
So the spoiled ones will go to the pigs. Then we're hoping there will be people coming on just to pick their own, and maybe some of them will end up in our honey processing kitchen and we'll come up with some products for the apples.
And we've got some hazelnuts, chestnuts, walnuts.
You've got a long-term vision for this place, haven't you?
Yeah. For the next 5 years, we're planting a lot of apple trees and pear trees. For the next 5 to 6 years, we're planting a lot of natives. Fencing. Fencing is a big thing for us. And then the honey extraction.
Yeah, a lot of things on the go all the time. But we do truly enjoy being here, and it just takes a long time to see the fruit of our labour.
Stacey Geelan ending that story. You also heard from her husband, Odie, at their farm in Motu Kararara.
Hi, my name is Dez. I live beside the Uara River, and you're listening to Country Life on RNZ National.
Head over the Rangitikei River, not far from the township of Mangaweka, leave behind the magnificent Papa Cliffs, and you enter the Kawhato Valley. It's mostly sheep and beef hill country here, but the valley floor is also home to a large asparagus farm, which grew out of tragedy and kindness shown to the owners of Mangaweka Asparagus, George and Diana Turney, when they first started out farming in the 1960s. We'll be cooking up some asparagus with them later, but first let's meet manager Sam Rainey and the men from Vanuatu here to work the harvest. The picking's done in the cool of the morning, and when I popped in, they were in the pack house, weighing and bundling the stems to be trucked off to supermarkets around the country.
So you won't find better quality than that. And that's purely down to these exceptional guys that we have come and join us every year.
How many workers have you got?
So we've got a team of 60 Nevan workers this year from Vanuatu. Probably 80% returnees, which is a big one for us. We're in full production by 15th of October, so they arrive in three groups. Some actually leave at Christmas, and then some stay through to early February. So we start a little bit later, and we harvest a little bit later also. We pick into January to supply a market after Christmas that still wants asparagus, so we manage the crop as best as we can to be able to do that.
My name is Glenn Toba.
You're the man in charge of quality control.
Yes.
What are you looking for in the asparagus?
What I'm looking for here, I have to make sure all the weight from 255 grams to 265 grams. And I have to make sure that all the rubber bands are in the line. And even the tape position are also in the line. We try to sell the best, so that we can earn more money here, so that all these boys, they're going to earn much more money when they get back home.
So it's all about it looking beautiful?
Yes, exactly.
How long have you been here?
I've been here 11 years.
11 years?
Yeah.
Glenn's he's a master, and he's exceptional in everything he does. So he's up front here as a QC, check weighing bunches. We are ensuring that spear diameter is within spec, so you want similar size spears within the bunch, so they cook relatively evenly. Presentation's a big one. We come to the market, we arrive to the market a little bit later when the earlier growers are in full swing, and our quality has to be spot on. So we really try and focus on producing a premium bunch.
Because you're missing that first kind of delight at the first asparagus of the season.
Exactly, and there's those earlier growers, they get a premium for that, and the market goes crazy over that early season stuff. We arrive to the market when actually there's a heap on around, and then you find now that asparagus is really good value. It's great buying.
So here in the valley, the Kawhato Valley, it's a long way from anywhere. What do the guys think when they come here?
Yeah, they want to earn money, and when they live back here, they save a lot of money when they're away from the town. Some of these boys, they build permanent houses, and some of them, they buy lands in Vanuatu, and some of them, they're getting married. They come here, work, they go on. And most of the boys, they pay school fees.
I've heard that many of the workers are able to build concrete homes to make their villages more resilient to cyclones, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so some of these boys, when they go back home of the seventh month, they bring back home about 12,000 New Zealand dollars or 15,000 New Zealand dollars. And when they change to Vatu, it's about 900 Vatu and 1 million Vatu.
And how much does it cost to build a house?
It's about 500,000 Vatu or maybe less. Yeah.
So they could build almost two houses?
Yes.
And do some of them set up businesses?
Yes, most of these boys, they do business, like retail shops, like buying copra.
And what about you? What do you do with your money?
I build my permanent house, and I do a retail shop in there, yeah.
And you go back for how many months a year?
This year I do 7 months.
This is a long time away from home.
Yes.
Did you miss your family? You must
have. Yes, I really miss them, but, yeah.
How do you keep in contact?
Oh, by phones. Yeah, we use what they call Imo. It's an app that uses Imo, and we can chat. And
Are all the guys here on the phone at night?
Yes.
Talking yes. to their families?
Yes. Not more than 11 p.m. Yeah, because next day we have to walk.
My name is Abby Seymour. I've been about 15 years now working in Mankaweka asparagus. I just love this place. It's nice and warm. People are here friendly.
On your days off, what do you do?
We just slip in and go down the river and catch a fish if we can. Especially just go hang around in the river, have a swim when it's hot. And yeah.
Bit chilly for what you're used to, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
What did you think was strange when you first came, and what did the guys...
We never eat cheese in Vanuatu. No cheese in Vanuatu, though. That's another...
Do you like it?
I've eaten it years and years now. I like it. It's good.
And fish. You must be missing your fish.
Fish. We never eat the fish we eat in Vanuatu here. No.
You miss it?
We miss fish. And the thing is, we don't eat much meat in Vanuatu, but in New Zealand we do eat meat, chicken, and most of the world they just get sick of chicken and meat too, so they just love fish.
They're desperate for meat. But you have your music, and the music is a big thing?
Yeah, it's a big thing that brings back what they have done in Vanuatu, like go around with your friends, enjoying time with music. So music is one of the things that helps them to make them feel at home.
Mangaweka Asparagus produces about 220 to 250 tonnes of asparagus every season, off 70 hectares. Sam Rainey is in his ninth season managing the farm.
This is really fertile, free-draining soil, and that's what asparagus needs. It's a stony silt loam on a river terrace. The key really is you don't want a heavy soil that's going to, where the plant's going to sit wet and that's when it sort of succumbs to soil-borne diseases. We get rain through summer, which is a big one. So
you've got good climate, good soil.
Yeah, exactly. And we're a bit later, our spring's a bit later, so you've got to be either producing early or producing late to make any money in this industry. Obviously, there's still a big period in the middle where you get 80% of your production and you have to continue to harvest that block to be able to pick it into January. It's either harvest it or you knock it off, keep knocking it off. So it's a combination of that to get into January. This block is 5 years old, so lasts anywhere from sort of 12 to 15 years. First, we'll plant seedlings and then leave it for 3 years while it establishes. Once it's in production, from year four on, you're picking it anywhere from 60 days right through to over double that.
And it just keeps on popping up.
So there's a plant every 200 mils, 175 mils, I think, in this block. And every plant may produce 10, 15 spears over a period. So that crown which sits under the soil produces new buds, and that's what those spears are, those new shoots, and that's what we're harvesting. Yeah, on a hot day they can grow, crikey, there's all sorts of numbers thrown around, but you can see it growing behind you nearly.
So the guys will go down every row constantly?
That's right, so...
Keep on coming back over the same road.
Yeah, we cover the same ground every day. So,
and it's all hand harvested.
It's all hand harvested. So, basically, you got a hip bucket and a picking knife, and you're picking to length. So you're just picking the long spears. So, for example, this one here, that's going to be good tomorrow, and that one actually. This one is probably 2 days away. It'll be there tomorrow, there the next day.
How has this season been so far?
Well, price-wise, it's been terrible. It's been about as bad as I've seen it in my 9 seasons, I think. And that's essentially just an oversupply and, well, a combination of an oversupply and lack of demand. Consumers just haven't been there. We're hearing from the retailers that sales are back on where they were this time last year, and that's the same retail point. So right now, it's come right back. You know, I think there's stores that were selling 2 bunches for $4. So that's good value in anyone's eyes, I hope.
Are you making any money?
No, we're not at that. And the market always bottoms out when all the growers in New Zealand are in full production. But this year, it's just overlapped a whole lot more. Waikato are a bit late starting. They flushed a bit later, and we were probably a little bit earlier. So there was more of a peak there than we would have liked. Yeah, I mean, we're going backwards right now.
Is it worth picking all the asparagus then for
you? No, well, you don't. You really limit what you harvest. So essentially you pick for the sales that you have, and you also have to look at the longer range forecast and factor in perhaps if there's cooler temps coming and you can hold a little bit of stock over and that sort of thing. So it's a constant
balancing act.
It is, really.
And you talk about the consumer demand being lower. Why is that?
Well, we're told it's a cost of living and there's better value in other vegetables. That's what we have been told as growers. But look, it's right now asparagus is really good value. It's fresh. I mean, every day we're harvesting and we're sending out every day. So it's what's really important is that it's turning over. So where we get a little bit frustrated is perhaps the market gets a bit blocked up, the supply chain gets a bit blocked up, and that value doesn't get passed on to the consumer as quickly as it should. So every day that it's not selling, it's sort of backing up.
How are you going to encourage more consumers to eat more asparagus?
As the asparagus industry body has got a big promotion this year, actually. As we're sort of throwing the kitchen sink at it, all you have to do is buy 2 bunches of asparagus over the next 5 weeks. We're giving away $5,000 travel voucher. So as an industry, that's huge for us. We're also brought produce departments on board, and we're giving away prizes to a produce department that's got the best display, turning over the stock, and most creative. So we're trying to target it at that side and also consumers. So it's been a real challenge to get it out there.
How did you get into asparagus growing?
I grew up a K up the road, actually, so we were, I suppose, family friends with George and Diana Turney. I picked it school holidays, and George rang me probably 10 years ago now and said, "Do you want a job?" So and it so happened that we could make it work. So I dragged my girlfriend at the time down here, and now my wife. We have 3 kids, and it's been great. We live in a great community. And
are you eating asparagus every night at this time of year?
Well, the answer is yes, of course.
What about your kids? Are they eating it?
They do. They don't have a choice, unfortunately. But they actually do like it.
So they go, so, "Oh no, not asparagus again."
No, they do like it. It's about getting it, cooking it, like not overcooking it. Sorry, getting it right, and it's pretty easy to do that.
How long do you cook your asparagus for, George?
Not anything. We just drop it into boiling water, and when it comes back to the boil, we take it out. So it's all it is blanched.
George and Diana Turney are the owners of Mangaweka Asparagus. Their house overlooks the asparagus paddocks, and they eat it twice a day during the season.
We first of all break off.
Snap off the ends.
Yep.
And
they make that sound, it means they're fresh.
Yeah, it is. Beautiful and fresh. And then when the water comes to the boil,
and because we're frugal and English, those would always be made into soup.
The ends.
The ends.
Yes. Yes.
George grew up on a chicken farm in England, and as a young man about 60 years ago, he joined a mate who had a plan to drive to New Zealand. They got as far as Singapore. To cut a long story short, George ended up making New Zealand his home, with Diana working on a sheep and beef farm just over the hill. But tragedy struck when, with 4 young children, their house burnt down in the middle of the night. Local friends and family came to their aid with goods and money, enough for them to buy a farm in Northland, which set them on their way. They eventually came back to Rangitike and planted their first asparagus here 25 years ago.
Why asparagus?
Because one of the biggest issues you have with growing vegetables is labour. And I've enjoyed employing labour. I've enjoyed helping people. Very interesting looking back over those years of the people that we've helped in this district get on their feet by learning to work and have a work attitude. And even then, of course, we moved from the local people as well as having backpackers, which we've built up relationships all over the world with these, and we've been to weddings and all sorts of things all over the world. So we became, so really, it was the employment of people that gave me the satisfaction. And now I look at it is that I know that there's 60 staff that you've seen in the pack house today that are making a living off a block of land that used to not even feed a couple as a sheep and beef farm. They both went off the farm, the previous owners, to earn money. And now we have a full-time manager and 60 other staff earning a living, a good living, off it. I was given the opportunity when I came to New Zealand to work and to make good money, and I'm pleased to say I've done the same for the people. And don't forget, when you lose a house and all your material things in life and the community come to your aid, I'm very pleased to give back.
Diana, yes. What has the connection with Vanuatu meant for you?
The Vanuatu and the Nevans, as we call them, are such loving, friendly, smiling people that they're a pleasure to have working for you. That not only that, they are hard workers and appreciate the opportunity, the accommodation we have, and even when we've done the coconut press that we went to Vanuatu to investigate so that they could have an industry of them, you know, while they're not with us. It's all enriching for us. It's a win-win for both for them and for us. Yeah. And we don't feel we have that employer-employee relationship. We feel that they're really our friends and part of our family, really.
The Turneys say it's great to have the team back after the tough COVID years, although this year is tough too with oversupply.
It breaks your heart to see a tractor driving out there mowing it off. I think we've mowed off pretty well the whole farm at some stage. We tried not to flood the market, but we still have 60 staff to be out there to pick. We still have 60 staff that have to be paid.
What about the export market?
We tried that last year. Very difficult with the transport side of it. Transport has become much more expensive and less reliable since COVID. We got it to Singapore and it had already gone off. And until we can find a very reliable way of doing it, and we're working on that all the time, that is the issue.
So what is the future then for the crop?
I think it's the future. I think there will always be a future because there is a percentage of the New Zealand population that love to eat asparagus, love to have it fresh, and they're very discerning. And I believe as long as we don't flood the market and the supermarkets do their job in keeping it fresh on the shelf and don't flood too much onto the shelves and just keep moving it on and just put enough out for the market every hour or something like that. And that's how it's got to be done. But that has a cost to the supermarket. Labour's a big issue and it's finding people that have a passion towards it.
There we go. Onto a platter and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then garlic and butter is a really good...
There's always lots of garlic.
Yes.
Organic garlic.
Yeah.
Grown locally. We get a wad of butter and we pull it through the butter the hot asparagus, and that just coats it nicely with the butter. The hollandaise sauce I like as well, but really it overpowers the lovely, tender, sweet taste of asparagus.
I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that we wrap it in bacon. Mm-hmm. And then we have a few wines beforehand, so our taste buds are stuffed up even more.
No. I have an amazing recipe, which is sliced asparagus, sun-dried tomato oil in the pan first. Pop in your sliced at an angle your asparagus. Then your sun-dried tomatoes, just chopped up. And then just as it's all finishing, I put in sliced mushrooms. And then we have a lovely Christmas dish, red, green and white. And it is delicious.
And indeed it was. George and Diana Turney in their kitchen in the Carfato Valley. George says they've also investigated canning to deal with oversupply, but that hasn't proved feasible. They're living by the mantra, fresh is best. And you can find the Turneys at the Fielding Farmers Market promoting this season's crop and a new dried product, which they swear by, for asparagus flavour all year round.
Well, on that lovely flavoured note, we'll end the show. It's all we've got time for. Now, don't forget, you can go to our webpage for more info on the stories you've heard today and photos of the people behind the voices. The address is rnz.co.nz/countrylife. Have a lovely weekend.
Hei tērā wiki, hei kuna rā. Until next week, goodbye.
Bye now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.